Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Welcome to Pod After Touchdown, PAT Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host for this episode, Andrew Mackins, joined by my producer, Garner, and I am super excited for this episode because we have Paul Lundgaard joining us. He is also known by his Twitter handle, at PaulieSleepers. He is a fellow member of the Undroppables, as I am a part of that, and a key cog in their podcast, Unscripted. He's also the inventor of hashtag GIF Perfection. Paulie, welcome to the show.
Yo, yo, yo. Paulie's in the house. What's going on, Andrew? Hey, Garner. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm really excited for this episode because we are talking AFC South. I am, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, a Tennessee Titans fan, even though I was born and raised in Green Bay. Don't need to go down that rabbit hole today, but you are a self-proclaimed Colts fan. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Born and raised in Indy, and the Colts came to town with the midnight move from Baltimore in 1985. My dad had season tickets the first two seasons. And absolutely, 100%.
That's awesome. Nice. Yeah, we're happy to have you. Garner, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Ready for this. I'm excited to see you two hash out in this division because Mackins normally is just kind of, we let him go with the Titans, so maybe Paulie can reel him back a little bit.
Yeah, I gotta make sure I balance my fandom appropriately, so hopefully Paulie can help me out with that, and maybe I can do the same with the Colts too, but from following this division more closely, I always feel like I like every team a little bit more in this division, but as you guys know, the listeners, we're going to start with our kickoff question, which may be the most contentious one that we've done so far. Then we'll jump into our mental health minute, and then dive into the meat of the show, the AFC South Divisional Preview. So let's kick off.
And this game is underway.
Paulie, we've been doing this question with all of our guests so far in these divisional previews. Who is your favorite to win the AFC South?
Oh, it's the Indianapolis Colts, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to assume you would say that, but I can totally see that too. It's with the combination of the roster, Philip Rivers coming in, and I think most importantly, the coaching, right?
Great coaching, great running game, great best offensive line in football. So, Houston will give us a run, and the Titans will give us a run too, and maybe Gruden will give Jacksonville some life, and who knows? It's usually a pretty competitive division. The last few years, after we dominated for forever with Peyton, so it's the playing field's a lot more level now. So it really is up for grabs. I don't think the Colts will run away with it by any means.
Yeah, I think there has been a really interesting amount of turnover with various positions, like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins leaving the Texans, Jadeveon Clowney obviously leaving. The change in QB last year was, you know, music to my ears, because I'm going to say this now. Obviously, I think the Titans are going to win the division, and I think it's because of that continuity that they have in Tannehill and Derrick Henry from last year. And the reason, actually, the Colts are probably my most hated team in the division is because you guys had Peyton Manning just dominated, and then, you know, one bad year, and then we'll kick the tires with Andrew Luck, just, you know, re-up, and we're good again. And I was not happy about that at the time, but obviously the tables have turned since his abrupt retirement.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. That's sad.
we don't have to.
Sad times for me, man. Like 2-3 weeks before the season starts, your franchise QB in his prime retires. But I saw it coming. I mean, the news around town was not good. So if you followed me back then, I was really worried that was going to happen. So it didn't shock me, but it was devastating, to say the least.
Yeah, no, I would feel for any team that happens to. Obviously, I'm a slightly less sad that it happened to the Colts, but
of course, yeah, you guys are probably rejoicing over there.
Garner, how about you potentially break this tie. Who do you have for winning the division?
I mean, it's really, it just feels like a grab bag overall. I mean, I can see so many arguments for every team here, but I think I got to go with my gut and unfortunately say the Titans.
Oh,
wow.
Not happy at agreeing with you here, but I'm going with my gut and saying that.
It'll definitely be interesting, and I think maybe if the Colts had a full off season, they'd be a little more prepared for this, you know, turnaround, bringing in Rivers and Taylor at the same time. But like you mentioned, Paulie, it's certainly up for grabs.
Absolutely.
But let's move on to our mental health minute topic, and this one's another question we've been asking all of our guests. What's one way, Paulie, that you've found has been helpful in, you know, keeping your mental health in a good state during quarantine?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I'm focusing on work because my work has been super busy the last 3 months since we've gone back to work. We shut down for a couple months. And reaching out and talking to people. I mean, people don't talk enough. You know, when we get our Zoom meetings going for the Undroppables, I always try to jump in there because it's just nice to see faces and talk to somebody. We text too much. We, you know, private message too much. We do too much contact that is not intimate. Mm-hmm. So, and my brother knows, my best friends know that I would much rather talk than text. So I usually get on them, especially if I, you know, say call me and they say, well, what's up? Like, fucking call me. That's what's up. You know. So, you know, talking with people, interacting in that fashion, I think is a lost art form. And there's no context in text either. So, you know, misunderstandings happen and that can lead to further frustration. We're all more isolated than we used to be. So we need to take the time to reach out however we can, whether it's Zoom or by the phone. Use your phone, people. Your phone was designed to make a phone call. I know it does a million other things, but that would be my tip.
I think that's well said, and I think you know, Garner and I being on the younger side in the community, I would say like that's something that is a lost art amongst ourselves. Is like a lot of times we're just, you know, sending links and memes to each other back and forth, and not enough Zoom calls for sure. And so I can definitely make a better effort to organize those meetings.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's tough for everybody, you know. Ask your close friends and family how they're doing. You know, keep touch with them, keep tabs with them. I've got people that keep tabs on me. I've had a rough time of it. My son moved away, moved out of my house right before this started. My mom is very, very ill in a nursing home. I've had other things going on too. It's, you know, a tough time, for mental health all the way around, but, I appreciate that you guys do something like this and spend time to talk about it. So, yeah, we just all need to make sure we don't forget how important that is.
Yeah, I think that is really important, and I appreciate you shouting out the mental health pod-a-thon. That's something we help sponsor as well and donated to those guys, you know, the Hayden Hurst Foundation.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
we have our own.
Yeah, the Hayden Hurst thing.
Yeah.
I forgot that he was kind of the cog in that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was them and the FF Faceoff were the guys that hosted it. I think Michael Hoff and Anthony Servino. They did some great work there. Got some great guests on, and for a good cause too. I mean, we have our own little GoFundMe that we probably don't promote enough or to help our own little piece of mental health. But, you know, the Hayden Hurst Podathon went, I think they surpassed their goal. They raised over $6,000, I believe, for that charity. So great things happening in the mental health space. And we're going to continue to do this for you guys. But let's get into the meat of this episode, the AFC South Divisional Preview. We are doing this position by position. So let's start with the quarterbacks. And my first question for you, Paulie, I believe in this, but do you believe Deshaun Watson still has QB1 overall upside, even without DeAndre Hopkins on the roster?
Yes, but to me, it's fringe. And I've mentioned it a few times on Twitter and gotten some negative feedback. I'm still very high on Deshaun in Dynasty. He's young. He's a very intelligent quarterback. He's got all of the tools. But he's going to be missing his binky, I think, this year. Cooks is not a high point contested catch guy like Hopkins was. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like their wide receiver core is made up by a lot of guys that do the same thing.
Sure.
Maybe at different levels. So you've got Stills and Fuller and Cooks that are all kind of stretch the field yards after the catch guys. Kiki Kuti, I don't know how he fits in there now, but I think he's going to miss DeAndre Hopkins a lot. I think his ceiling is going to be limited this year, and I think he'll feel the effects. I think his, you know, his attempts will be a little shorter, try and get rid of the ball quicker, and when he takes those deep shots, like I said, who's he going to throw to? One of those guys that's healthy, if Will Fuller stays healthy, if Stills, Cooks, I mean, it's interesting. They all have sorted injury histories. They all kind of play the same type of ball game. And yeah, so I think he does, but I don't think he has top five potential without DeAndre Hopkins. No.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that completely. And like you said, it's tough because all of his weapons seem to have a bad injury history, even including David Johnson now. Again, should be a good weapon, but has been hurt a lot. But I think what really keeps him in that QB1 speak overall, though, is definitely his rushing too, which I feel like still kind of is starting to get overlooked just because we have all the flashy, not that he's old, but younger rushing quarterbacks coming in. It's like, well, yeah, Watson still rushes a lot too and gets numerous rushing TDs every year. So like that helps boost him into that QB1.
Yeah, it's interesting what you guys mentioned, because I think the way the notes read here is if we think Deshaun Watson, the way he's drafted is around like the top five or six. And so my take, and just this is kind of taking from Jamie Eisenberg from CBS, is this could be like his Cam Newton year where he just has to do it all himself and he runs so much that he becomes the QB1, like overall, like the QB1. And based on what you and Garner were saying, Paulie, it sounds like you're saying more like you're definitely fading that just because of the situation. So it different.
Yeah. And I mean, if he does do that Cam style, then yeah, that's definitely possible. I don't see him just putting everything on his back and running that much to have overall QB1 potential. No. And I'm still drafting him, you know, around QB5 in Dynasty. Absolutely. But sure, not in redraft. No.
Gotcha,
you've got to go after that guy too early. To me, there's guys that are going to be rounds and rounds and rounds later that have better value and a little bit more stability. I'm worried about him without Nuke.
Yeah, I think you set me up for a perfect segue. Speaking of QBs with better value later on in the draft, and especially if you're going to punt on QB, as we say in the industry. There are three AFC South QBs that I think are in that conversation of deep sleeper or like, you know, past the QB1 range going into, you know, QB2 range. Which of these three would you rather have if you're, you know, completely punting in a normal redraft league? Is it Tannehill, Ryan Tannehill, Gardner Minshew 2, or is it Phillip Rivers?
My answer is going to surprise you. The answer is Gardner Minshew.
Okay. Please tell more. I normally, when I think of Minshew, I think the rushing is where it's at, and that's what's going to help him. But
that's what's going to help him, and I think Gruden will open up that playbook big time. Open up the pass attempts, open up the passing game more. And it's really more a knock on Rivers and Tannehill and how many attempts I think they will have versus, you know, Garner being the be all and end all. I don't know that I'm targeting Garner. Just out of those three, I think he has the best chance of a higher rushing floor and much more passing volume. I mean, Tannehill threw 286 attempts in 12 games. That projects out to 357. That's not a lot at all.
No.
Now, he raised their yards per attempt by quite a bit, which was hovering around 7 the beginning of the year and last year to 9.6. So that's where he got some good fantasy weeks in and out. He was very efficient with that. But I see that a similar type of playbook for the Colts, who ran 470 times last year, best offensive line in football, number one graded run blocking offensive line, and the addition of Jonathan Taylor. Phillip Rivers is older. They're not going to want to have him air out and throw the game on his shoulders. I think they're going to run the crap out of the ball. And on the Unscripted podcast last week, we record on Tuesdays. It was the night before the free agent, you know, deadline. And the news was the Titans were not going to sign Derrick Henry. I mean, you're a fan, so I'm sure you were following along with that. The news out of camp was it wasn't going to happen. And I said on our podcast the night before that that would really surprise me because he fits what y'all want to do so well. Mm-hmm. You know, BZ brought up a good point that there's a lot of free agents next year. There's another good rookie crop of running backs, and maybe they just want to see what they could get for cheaper. But I think they ended up signing him to a pretty good deal, $25 million guaranteed, right? Over 4 years.
Yeah, 4 year, $50 million deal. And they can get out of it, I believe, after 2 years.
They can get out of it after 2 years. They're paying him $10.5 million this year, essentially, you know, on the franchise tag, essentially giving him a little bit more than 2 years extra of that franchise tag money, which he was happy with. And I think that him and his agent probably saw the writing on the wall too, where as devalued as this position has been getting, it's going to get even worse next year with tons of free agents and 3 or 4 studs coming out of the draft. So y'all were really smart to lock him up. That reaffirms kind of, I was like, okay, that's, you know, even though I would like to see him walk because he's a beast and he's in my division, it was the right thing for your team to do. But those two teams are going to want to run a lot. So I would go with Garner. That's where I'm at.
I think that's a totally fair argument. I think it is going to be a little weird seeing Rivers not just chuck it down the field like and just heave up a prayer every now and then. But, you know, I'm totally with you there. Any differing opinions, Garner?
I was leaning towards Tannehill. I know, like you said, I mean, they do want to run the ball more. But based off of what he did once he got to Tennessee last year, and he was just so consistently productive that they're bringing all the same weapons back for him, and hopefully he'll run the same overall. And again, he might not have the most amount of pass attempts, but he hits a deep one or two to AJ Brown, and there you go. There's enough points for the week for you.
Yeah, his efficiency is crazy from last year. It'll be interesting to see how much they can keep that up with given their limited volume. But we mentioned there's some teams there that are going to be running the ball a lot. So let's jump into running backs. And we're going to start with Jonathan Taylor because obviously, you know, we got Polly in here because he's the Colts expert. And like you mentioned before, he's got his ear to the ground here, too, in terms of camp whispers. And you know, we don't have a camp right now. But for you, Polly, how long do you think it will take for Jonathan Taylor to become the starter and kind of beat out Marlon Mack for this bell cow back role in Indy?
Just a handful of games. And also it'll hinge on Mack's health. He's good to miss 3 or 4 games a season. It just happens every year. So, I mean, he's a 12, 13 game guy. So as soon as he misses that first game and Jonathan Taylor has the chance to get a bigger nut, he'll show it. Or if that doesn't happen right after the first, you know, 3, 4, 5 games, it's just going to happen because he's the best guy in that backfield. And I wanted to mention, and I don't know, you know, how you feel about this, but when I was following the draft and they traded up to take Jonathan Taylor, I really felt that they were taking him out of the Jacksonville Jaguars pocket. If you look, they traded up 3 spots, which essentially they just leaped Cleveland and Jacksonville. That's it. To go and grab him. And Cleveland obviously wasn't taking him after putting a second round tender on Hunt, and they've got Nick Chubb. So they had to have been worried that Jacksonville was going to take him. There was tons of rumors that, you know, Fred Taylor.
Throwback.
That's how old Pauly is. That Leonard Fournette was on the trade block. And I really think that they thought there was a good chance that Jacksonville would take him. So by taking him, they got a franchise running back, but also kept him out of a division's pocket. So I don't know. That's if you kind of paid attention to what happened in that draft, but why would you trade up and just, you know, to go past two teams for a guy? It's because you think one of those teams is going to take him.
I love that you brought that up, because now as you know, it's coming back to me as you kind of recount it, when they traded up, I thought they were going to go for like their guy at the wide receiver position. Instead, they got Taylor, and then they waited and they got their guy later in Michael Pittman.
Right.
So it's interesting to see that they did prioritize running back over wide receiver.
It was such a deep class, and I think they felt like they could get. I figured it would be either Pittman or Higgins, but I figured that they were looking at that group of guys, and Mims, those guys and that, and knowing they could get one of those guys, but knowing that there was just one Jonathan Taylor. In the draft. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Dobbins and Swift, you know, those guys are really, really good too. But I think Taylor has Zeke, you know, potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a definite vote of confidence for sure. And you mentioned Leonard Fournette in there about, you know, the uncertainty around him ever since the draft or even before that. And they basically put him on the trading block, no bites, nothing. So he's still in Jacksonville. The Jaguars bring in Chris Thompson, who is obviously has some rapport with Jay Gruden from their time in Washington. Are you drafting Leonard Fournette with any level of confidence this year? And this is, you know, for redraft specifically, it could be even murkier for Dynasty, but just within this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I'm not expecting 100 targets again. And, you know, I think that was an outlier, and Chris Thompson's going to take some of that. I mean, we got to realize Chris Thompson's been around for a while, and he has a sordid injury history too. So it's not like that guy's going to be out there smashing for 16 games. I mean, he's going to be a fill-in, a third down fill-in, and he'll steal some targets. But yeah, I mean, contract year, he wants to prove his worth. The team has no reason not to run him into the ground. They tried to trade him. They couldn't come up with anything. So that, I would draft him with confidence for redraft. I wouldn't want him on a dynasty team right now, not knowing what his situation is next year.
I think I've heard some of the concerns I've heard since is like, well, what if they somehow get a deal midseason, or if they just bench him for the backups? But I like your perspective on that, that it's more likely they just run him into the ground and that they use, you know, what they've got. He said, Fournette said he's going to work his ass off no matter where he is. So take his word for it, and he can earn a trade or earn some value that way. So,
yeah, he's not getting benched for Ryquell Armstead.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's well, we already talked a little bit about Derrick Henry. I think, you know, the Texans backfield is very murky. I don't know if there's any, you know, podium take that you want to stand on there, but if not, we're going to move into the wide receivers. And I think the main guy we want to talk about is DJ Chark. He hasn't gotten a ton of buzz this offseason from what I've seen. He's a guy that's in there with all of the medium round depth. But he is one of those, you know, potential third year breakout receivers. Do you think he has the ability to get in that top 15 in terms of wide receiver performances? And is that performance TD dependent? Because I think he showed last year that it was very TD dependent.
He was, and so was AJ Brown, which we haven't gotten to him yet. But yeah, he was TD dependent. But the biggest thing that I'm looking at right now is Matt Harmon's reception perception, which I've called the wide receiver Bible for years now. Mm-hmm. If you look at that tree, you know, that beautiful glowing tree, we've all seen it, you know, with the all the routes and the yellow and red and green. It looks exactly like Godwin's did 2 years ago. It's pointing towards that breakout, and that's really all I need. Because, like I said, Matt Harmon is fantastic. His equation and formula that he uses to come up with that reception-perception grade has been on point for quite some time. And it's the reason why so many people were really high on Godwin a couple years ago. One of the biggest reasons. And I think he's been getting some buzz. I mean, obviously, you follow me on Twitter. You know, we're talking about Dynasty almost all the time. And I see a lot of buzz about DJ Moore and DJ Chark quite a bit. Shout out to Bearded Shotgun, by the way. We had to shout him out on our pod this week because when everything was so murky last year, if you remember training camp, one day they were talking about D.D. Westbrook. One day they were talking about Chris Conley. One day they were talking about DJ Chark. None of us really knew who was going to kind of separate themselves from the pack. But Beards did. He drafted DJ Chark in all of these dynasty leagues, and he has him now. He was a firm believer in that guy, so I got to give him a shout out. But, yeah, I think he could break the top 15, absolutely. The volume will be there. There'll be more trust. Yeah.
Definitely seemed like he had the stronger relationship with Minshew as well. So I like the volume play for him, especially if they're going to be passing more.
Put him like in the slot, sorry to interrupt, but if they put him in the slot a little bit, that'll be big. I think that Gruden's offense could really see some more potential for Dede too, because Dede's a slot player. And, you know, we've seen like what Jamison Crowder has done in that offense, in that slot position. So I think that Dede and DJ Chark will be kind of sharing that. Yeah. And the news out of camp is that LaVisca is going to compete with Chris Conley for the outside wide receiver two position. And I'm a huge LaVisca fan. We're talking redraft, so I wouldn't go too crazy about him in redraft, but keep an eye on him. You know, he could be a waiver wire pickup later on in the year because that guy, they're talking about using him all over the place. He was used all over the place in Colorado as a quarterback in the Wildcat, as a running back. Bubble screens, long plays. He trucks through people. Really, really strong player. He fell off because he had a core injury. And he kind of fell out of the draft. But one of my favorite players coming out of this draft that nobody, that not a lot of people are talking about. And I think he'll have the opportunity. But yeah, DJ Chark, top 15. I think he could do it. Absolutely.
I think that's a good shout out for LaVisca too. Fun fact, because I've been writing out our Undroppables Jaguars offseason breakdown right now. And did you know that D.D. Westbrook, since you mentioned him, had back-to-back years with exactly 66 receptions on 101 targets?
Oh, that's nuts.
Yeah, he had the exact same target and receptions that 2018 to 2019. So it will be interesting. You mentioned Jake Gruden to see if he can improve on that. Because I was hoping for him to, you know, improve with DeFilippo in there last year, but it was
too I'm still holding out hope for Dede. I'm still holding out hope for him. It's kind of mixed feelings for me because LaVisca went there. Now I don't know who to root for, but and then who knows what's going to go on with the tight end position? They got Eifert, they have Josh Oliver. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to go on there.
Yeah, me neither. You know, you mentioned AJ Brown. I think everyone thinks he's like this boom bust guy, right? I know we don't have this in the notes, but we can just touch on it briefly. I think he's obviously in Dynasty got this massive upside. He could be the next Julio Jones, but I mean, in terms of his efficiency, he's got to have some regression in 2020, right?
Yeah, I mean, extremely touchdown dependent. One of the highest, if not the highest, touchdown dependent wide receiver of 2019. 20.2 yards per reception. So that tells you right there he's living off of the big plays. Julio Jones, yeah, no, I mean, just because the volume's not going to be there. He got 84 targets. I could see him going into up to like a Tyler Lockett 2019 type range where he's getting like 110 targets. But, I mean, when you're talking about you know, the top guys get 140 to 170 targets.
Right.
When you've got Tannehill probably throwing less than 400 balls, I mean, he was projected last year at 350. So if we give him more and he's at 400, there, you know, there's not enough mouths to feed where Brown's getting more than around 100 or 110 targets, in my opinion. So if his targets go up and his efficiency and touchdowns go down, he could end up being right around where he was last year and finish.
Yeah, it is. When I mentioned Julio, I was definitely kind of throwing that dynasty nugget in there. And I think that's how people see him, as like a profile. That's who he actually aspires to be. And so I won't belabor the point there for, you know, 2020. Well, he's in a totally different situation.
After Tannehill leaves, if they get like the next Ben Roethlisberger that's going to throw the ball 600 times, then yeah, he's got that kind of upside.
I mean, they would almost need an entirely different coach unless Mike Vrabel is willing to adapt. But that's, yeah, I don't have a crystal ball for that. So I know you touched on some of the Texans receivers before, Fuller and Cooks in particular. I mean, they've also got Kenny Stills, Randall Cobb, Kiki QT. So we've got two different questions for you here. Which Houston wide receiver between Fuller and Cooks would you rather have? And then any reason for a late round flyer on the other three?
It would definitely be Cooks, because Fuller has just shown that he can't stay on the field. Cooks has his concussion situation where he's maybe, you know, one or two concussions away from being done. Unfortunately, he's had several, but I think he has the, you know, pseudo wide receiver one upside, where Will Fuller would be my best ball pick. And going back to AJ Brown, I would take him in best ball too, big time. The late round flyer, I think, can be taken on Randall Cobb. Absolutely. Especially in a deeper league with more rounds, possibly, you know, definitely not taking him in a shorter league, in a shorter draft, but in a 12 to 14 team league or more, I would take a flyer on Cobb late. Cause like I said, you know, without Newt to get those jump balls, I could see him maybe dumping it down a little bit more. And Cobb's that guy that's going to be just running slants right over the middle and right there in front of his face. So yeah, I could see something there. Stills, I've always liked Kenny Stills, and God, I learned some stuff this week about him that I did not know. I mean, I think it's because he's not flashy about it, but he has done some crazy things off the field for his organization, his personal organization, what he's done for the community. Shout out to him. And I've always liked him, but it's going to get really muddy. Like I said, Stills and Fuller and Cobb, you got QQQT still, but I think Cobb would be the one that I would take a flyer on.
All right. Hey, Garner, is your gut telling you anything different here?
No, exactly the same thing. In a regular redraft league, I'm liking Cooks over Fuller. Best ball, I'd love to have Fuller. And then as he for all the reasons he already said, I could definitely see going Cobb for that late round flyer if you want.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty much in lockstep with you guys. I sometimes lean Stills, but maybe I'm just waiting for it to happen on the flyer. And granted, he has one more year of experience with Watson, but you know, it didn't show too much last year, so it's just so murky. It's hard to do anything there with confidence. And you know, here's some pass catchers that I think we might have a little bit more confidence in, or at least some guys we're willing to plant our flags on in the tight end position. Paulie, I know that you've been a bit of a Jack Doyle truther. Maybe that's overstating it, but how do you like him as Rivers' tight end now that he is like that, you know, number one guy on the depth chart in Indy?
Yeah, I like it. He is going to be with a guy that likes throwing to his tight ends. And he's done it before. In 2017, he had 108 targets and 80 catches, 690 yards, 4 touchdowns. I would have liked to have seen more touchdowns there. But he was a tight end one that year. The last 2 years, he's, you know, struggled with some inconsistent quarterback play and some injuries. You got to be careful. You know, the guy missed, you know, 10 games 2 years ago. missed a couple games in 17, missed four games in 16. But Rivers, an interesting stat about Rivers is outside of 1 year when Antonio Gates got hurt and Danny Woodhead led the team in targets, every person that's led the team in targets ever since he's been there has been 6'4 or higher. And not necessarily a tight end, but we're talking about Vincent Jackson and Tyrell Williams and Keenan Allen, Antonio Gates. All those guys are big guys. He likes throwing to big guys, and that favors Jack Doyle, where you've got T.Y. Hilton at 6 feet, Campbell's 6'2". Michael Pittman is 6'5", by the way. So I know that's kind of a weird stat, but I've always said that. I've always said that, like, as long as I've been doing this for 20 years, like, Philip Rivers just has these monster guys he's always throwing to. On Indy, a couple of the guys are on the smaller side, but you've got Pittman and Doyle that are big. He's always fed the tight end, and I think that if Doyle stays healthy, he could definitely see – I don't think he'll see 108 targets like he did 3 years ago, but I think he could definitely see 80 or 90 targets and be a deep find, a gem to draft late and redraft.
Yeah, I think that's right where we are. Sorry, Garner, are you going to jump in there?
I was just going to kind of laugh and say that I love that he's talking about that and how he brings up how Rivers likes to toss it to his tight end, because I'm pretty sure I brought up that point to Sam like 2 months ago and said something about how, like, Doyle, like, I feel like Sam has him ranked way too low, and Sam just scoffed at me. He's like, yeah, Rivers doesn't have any repertoire with him, though. It's not going to happen. Like, he won't see the ball. Well, and now to hear Pauly be like, yeah, but don't feel like this is a good target that he should like.
I think, you know, the thing with Sam is that, and he's not on the podcast to defend himself, but the haters of Jack Doyle like to say that, you know, Jack Doyle is not Antonio Gates and Jack Doyle is not Hunter Henry. But I think that you bring up a good point, Pauly, to counteract that, in that Jack Doyle is a big target and Philip Rivers likes throwing to big targets. So there you go.
Well, an opportunity is overlooked in this, what we do. So yes, he's not Hunter Henry, but also Antonio Gates wasn't anything the last few years he played. I mean, God, he caught the ball and turned around and fell down for like the last 3 years he was there. And he was still productive for fantasy because he was a trusted target. Doyle could become a trusted target and be in the right place at the right time and have that opportunity. Trey Burton was brought on, who will be in on the two tight end sets and blocking a lot. But I think he'll get out there, but he won't be running all the routes that Doyle will. And they still have Mo Alie-Cox, who will be in his third year, but he's used very sparingly. They run some three tight end sets, which is interesting. I went to several games last year, and when they get in on the red zone, they'll throw all three of those guys out there. But, he's not Antonio Gates. He's not Hunter Henry. I don't think is a good argument because, he's still the starting tight end for a team that's going to move the ball with a guy that likes throwing to tight ends. I mean,
yeah. You know, you mentioned Mo Alie-Cox and Jack Doyle being injury prone. That could be a deep, deep, deep sleeper if Doyle were to get injured, because Alie-Cox is 6'5", 267 pounds, an absolute beast. But we don't need to wax poetic on that.
He's a big boy. The fantasy footballers, exactly. Mike Wright talks about him every once in a while and says that he swears he's 6'10", but they just list him as 6'5", so nobody gets too scared, because, like, when you see him out there, and his head is just massive, too. He's just this gigantor, I think, is who Mike Wright calls Mo Alley. Definitely could be a good sleeper, a good streamer if Doyle goes down, a good DFS target if Doyle goes down, you know, at the minimum pricing.
Let's talk about one more sleeper in the tight ends section, as you are, you know, at Pauly Sleepers. And tell me, how much do you love Jonnu Smith? Do you actually love him more than I do, or do we need to figure this out right now?
Randall, the Terminator, who does the podcast with me, hates on me for liking Jonu so much. And Twitter is tired of hearing about the man. So I haven't talked about him much anymore. But sure. There are receipts. I was talking about him before this whole wave started. You know, it's tough. You know, so many people are talking about him now. It's almost going to be like it's going to be really hard. It's like that movie that disappoints because you've heard so many good things and you go and you're like, yeah, it was all right. Because of the passing volume that Tennessee lacks, he doesn't have top, you know, tight end one upside. I just think he could be a great guy if you're punting at the position. In redraft, when I punt, I like to grab a couple guys late just to kind of hedge my bets, you know, and Doyle and Jonu would be a couple guys you could grab late and see which one flourishes. But I like the way y'all used him towards the end of last year. He made some circus catches. You used him as a runner a little bit. He will just roll over people. He's got the profile. I think the big hate is just because it's not a high passing volume offense, so his upside is limited, you know.
I agree. I think
I like him a lot. I'm a big fan. I like Jonu Smith.
Man. I think that's the biggest knock against him, but I think if you really look at that team, he's probably the second best pass catching option they have. And so he should be getting a little higher target share than people give him credit for. And like you said, you know, the way they use him, that John Robinson, the GM, wanted to draft these big athletic guys who can make plays, and that's how they've started to build out that offense along with, you know, Derrick Henry. So I'm excited to see what they do there.
Yeah, and give him 35 of Delanie Walker's 45 targets from last year. And you've got a low tight end too.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love that sleeper value, that opportunity there. So we went through all the positions, didn't talk about every player, but with this miscellaneous section, we want to just ask two questions to round it out, and we'll go around the horn. What's one player from this division you'll be targeting to have on your rosters, and then one player you're avoiding at all costs, regardless of value?
I mean, I'll be out on David Johnson. I'm out on him. And I'll be targeting Jack Doyle.
Fair enough. Garner, I'll let you go next.
I love punting the tight end position, and I think that Doyle's going to surprise people.
Yeah, I think I actually got talked into in this one, and this is more kind of like a based on what I've seen the value now, targeting Leonard Fournette, where, I mean, I've seen him be falling down a little bit to like beginning of the third round. I mean, not drastically far, but far enough that, as Paulie pointed out, I mean, he's a great player. As of now, they have no reason not to run him into the ground and give him all the carries they can. So for fantasy purposes, that should be just wonderful. I haven't really thought about my avoid. So Mackens, why don't you go and then I'll close out with my avoid.
All right. I'm thinking about it at the same time too, honestly. I think obviously I'm going to target Jonu Smith. I've been doing it already, so I'm definitely going to be targeting him. And for a void, I will go against the grain with you, Garner. I will avoid Leonard Fournette, particularly because he's not going to see anywhere near the receiving work he did last year. Yeah, he'll get some touchdown regression, but if they're a bad team and they're throwing a lot more, they're going to be running a lot less too. So I think that kind of caps him.
Gotcha. I mean, I feel like my avoid is a very strange one here and probably not popular at all, but so far, like, I love Jonathan Taylor, but I am just not confident drafting him where he's going right now, and am just worried about how his workload and for a redraft league, how, I mean, I don't know. I always start off to, or have a bad start, I feel like, to a season. So I don't like drafting to be like, yeah, no, like he's going to take over. It's like, I'm always too cautious and too worried about that early season.
I love both of your answers, because Fournette, if he is slipping into the early to mid third, then his targets going from 100 to even, you know, 70 is baked in already. I mean, where would you have drafted him last year? I mean, in the back half of the first round, if you knew what he was going to do. So if he regresses a little bit and you can get him in the early to mid third round, then that's a selection. That's a great selection.
And hopefully, and,
you're fine. Go ahead.
He'll get some points back. He'll lose the receptions, but I think he only had 3 touchdowns last year.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you're going to hope for more than 3 from Leonard Fournette. So like, he'll hopefully stay in that same point range overall and make up for the lack of catches with some touchdowns.
Right. Just the basic math on how much he touched the ball should have been a bare minimum of 6 to 7 touchdowns. So he could miss out on some passing work and be back to a normal touchdown rate and be right where he was at last year, which would mean he's a steal. And I'm a Colts fan and I love Jonathan Taylor, but fading him in redraft is not a bad idea. I'm actually fading a lot of rookies. Now we've got no preseason. So it could take them a little while to get going, and people get rookie fever in redraft and draft them way too early. So you can't get value. There's no value in Jonathan Taylor unless he just busts out and is Saquon Barkley or Zeke, you know, year one. And I see his value being way higher next year with Mack out of town than it is this year. Because they're still going to use Marlon Mack. He's under contract. Yeah. He's 25 years old. He knows the offense. He's not going to get benched and sit and hold the Gatorade. He's going to get touches, and it's going to be touches that Jonathan Taylor's people are not going to like.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, he's not going to – like, Mack's not going to be able to play every game. Like, you can't count on for every game. But, I mean, he's still a solid running back. I feel like the same way about him almost as I did about Jordan Howard like a couple of years ago when the Bears had him. And, like, he's doing all right. And then they're like, yeah, but we're going to draft a replacement and just send you off because you're apparently not good enough for us. And I think Howard was performed better, but I'm still getting the same vibe of someone who, again, he's not bad, but he's just not quite as good as they were hoping for, so they're phasing him out.
Yeah, I think that's good points that, you know, Polly added. So I think I'm going to have to rethink my target and my avoid a little bit. But that is the division preview for the AFC South. Now we've got some lightning round questions for you, Polly, to round this episode out. Just, you know, say the first thing that comes to mind. Favorite sport to watch besides NFL football?
Say UFC fighting.
Ah, interesting. We haven't gotten that one yet. Hawaiian pizza, good or abomination?
That is ridiculous. Get that out of here.
All right. This is a Scott Fishbowl question. Favorite toy growing up?
It'll have to be Star Wars figurines and the ships and everything.
Yeah.
Army Men was way up there too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. We love Star Wars here. So love that.
I had some of the original. I mean, I'm old, as you guys know. Yeah. I had some of the original shit. Like, you know, like from the first movie, the Stormtroopers and the Ewoks and all that. Yeah.
Awesome. Give us one streaming recommendation. Kind of a quarantine-themed question, either TV show or movie. I think you said the other one, your TV recommendation off pod or record before we started recording.
Oh, yeah. Right now I'm watching Weeds, which I never got around to watching. And it's not what I expected. And I'm getting to a really good part as from what I've heard from everybody, because everybody's already seen the show. So I won't say that one because everybody's seen that one, I think, by now. That's an old show. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to throw everybody for a loop here because I've been watching a lot of TV. The new Sabrina is good. It's not the bubblegum Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It's dark. It's very interesting. It's well written. There's a lot of good TV out there, but I'm trying to pick one that I don't think people know about. So it might sound like an interesting, weird answer, but it's because I just kind of stumbled upon it, and it's actually pretty fire.
Yeah, that is a sleeper TV pick if I've ever heard one. And I, funny enough, Paulie, I have watched that with my girlfriend. We're completely caught up on it, and I think they've got one more season.
Oh, you've watched Sabrina?
Yeah, it's so. I think the full
so. What
name,
do you think?
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. It would not be my first choice, but like I said, that is a sleeper show. Like I think it's solid. I think it is, like you said, not what people would really expect. And there's a lot of dark, like it touches on a lot of things that are in, you know, folklore from like witchcraft and Satanism and things like that. So, you know, it's not your mom's Sabrina.
No.
Teenage witch for sure. All right, back to the questions. What's the best purchase you've made this year?
Oh, I just upgraded my BMW. I think I showed pictures in the chat. I don't know if you saw it or not.
I think I missed it.
Well, I sell BMWs, and I've done that for 8 years here in Indianapolis at Dreyer Reinbold. And I've had three of them. The last one that I just traded in was a 2011 with 120,000 miles on it that I bought really cheap. And I just bought a 2017 640 Grand Coupe, frozen white. It's absolutely the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. I bought it last week.
Oh, that's awesome. We had Mike Tagliere on our show last week.
Tags.
It posted yesterday, and this is going to be, or Tuesday rather. We're recording on Wednesday. Your episode's going to be up tomorrow, so everyone gets a peek behind the curtain there. But yeah, he's a car guy. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Wrap it up with him. He upgraded his car with a turbocharger or something like that. So we got back.
I didn't know that. Tags is awesome. He almost did my podcast, but I ended up ending it when he still was on like the show coming up. But man, now that I know I'm following Tags, this feels anticlimactic because I know I can't bring the noise like that guy, man. He's the best.
No, I mean, you've been great, Paulie. We've only got a few more questions for you here in our quote unquote lightning round.
No, bring it on, man.
Who is the first fantasy football player you remember drafting?
Oh, Tiki Barber.
Okay, nice, nice.
And he got me a championship that year too because Ron Dane was supposed to be the starter.
Yeah.
And they called it Thunder and Lightning. That was the duo that they tagged it, that it was going to be Thunder and Lightning. And Ron Dane was going to be the Thunder. And Tiki Barber ended up being the Thunder and the Lightning. And he scored like 18 touchdowns. It was amazing. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, last question. If you had all the free time in the world, what's one hobby you would dedicate your time to that isn't fantasy football related? I think you might have mentioned it with the BMWs.
Oh, I'd be fishing.
Oh, okay. Fishing. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd get a bass boat and just dive into that big time.
Awesome choice, man. Well, again, Paul, you've been a great guest. We appreciate the time. So thank you so much for coming on. Again, his Twitter is at Paulie Sleepers, and he's been doing the Unscripted podcast as part of the Undroppables. Anything else that you want to plug before we finish up here?
Well, obviously, can'tcutlist.com. That's our website for the Undroppables. Pretty much dropping like three articles a week now. And you've been, I think I shouted you out today. You and Master Gene have been killing it lately with content and with pushing us to do what we're supposed to do. You've been pushing me on my Indy Colts offseason article, which will be out here probably the beginning of next month. But Can't Cut List has dynasty rankings. They're super flex based, which I think is somewhat unique. We're not the only people that do it, but it's one of the only sites you can go to and get a super flex dynasty consensus rankings. And, yeah, that's it. Check out the Unscripted podcast, like, review, all that good stuff. It usually drops on Friday mornings. We just recorded last night. And we just did episode 6, and it's been getting better and better, and we love it.
Perfect. Thank you again, Paulie. That is at the Undroppables and at Paulie Sleepers if you want to follow those accounts. Don't forget to check out can'tcutlist.com. I am at Andrew Mackins. with my producer at Garnther. You can follow our podcast on at Pod After TD. And with that,
the extra point is good.